A new and unusual chapter is unfolding in the nation's capital, but not every proposed change is coming from the White House. Plenty is originating in Congress, which might get a more sympathetic ear from the Trump administration than it did from the Obama. To give us a sense of the near-term agenda on Capitol Hill, roll call senior editor David Hawkins. And I guess it's fair to say this is the real curtain opening week on whatever is going to come next. And I guess nobody is certain, are they?
No, there's really a very, very surprising degree of uncertainty from the Trump White House about what they want the priorities to be, and from the Republican Congress about how they are hoping to time their own agenda in coordination with the Trump administration. There was presumably some definition given to that when the congressional leadership went down to the White House on Monday night. So we will see.
And let's talk about confirmations. That's kind of the first order of business that the Trump administration would like from Congress, I think it's fair to say, or from the Senate. And what's the outlook this week?
Well, the outlook is suddenly uncertain again. Three cabinet secretaries have now been confirmed. All the three major sort of national security cabinet secretaries, concluding with Mike Pompeo, the Kansas congressman, was on the confirmation docket Monday night. But after that, Mitch McConnell has not said how he hopes to stage this. And over the weekend, Chuck Schumer, the new Democratic leader, made more and more angry noises about slow walking, if not stopping, several of these nominees. Just to remind those of us who've been around Washington for a long time and keep thinking, oh, the Democrats could stop any of these people with a filibuster, that is no longer the case. The Democrats essentially defanged themselves 2 years ago when the shoe was on the other foot and the Democrats were in charge and the Republicans were filibustering nominees by changing the rules, the so-called partial nuclear option, but it's for nominees only. All nominees except Supreme Court nominees can now get through on a simple majority vote without any filibuster opportunity.
And if a candidate or a nominee, I should say, gets bottled up in committee, that doesn't necessarily mean that somehow they can't maneuver that name out to the entire Senate for a vote.
There are parliamentary ways to do that. There are also parliamentary ways, even if the committee has a tie vote on a nominee, or even if the committee votes negatively towards a nominee, there are parliamentary maneuvers to get that nominee to a vote by the full Senate anyway.
Because by this point in his administration, President Obama had about eight or nine confirmees.
There were seven on opening day, and there were a couple more in a couple of days afterwards. So, yes, this is already a very different pace. Now, it is also the case that, unlike 8 years ago, several of these nominees had not finished their paperwork, their routine. It's not routine at all. It's quite exhausting and usually requires hiring some lawyers to fill out their Office of Government Ethics paperwork and make their financial disclosures. Several of the Trump nominees were behind the curve on that, so that gives the Senate a responsible or at least a plausible rationale for not moving ahead.
I want to talk about some House legislation, some of which has passed and some is in the Senate already, particularly a bill from Virginia's Bob Goodlatte, who's chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He has put forth a bill which did pass in the House, and now there's a Senate version of that one, to completely overhaul how federal agencies go about creating regulations. And this is really aimed at, I think, the EPA primarily, but really across government. And I guess, how do you handicap that one in the Senate?
Well, there were he describes that every chance he gets as a bipartisan bill, and that might be technically true. There are a couple of conservative Democrats who think this is a smart idea, but it did get 183 no votes on the House floor. So that's what we call, you know, a relatively close to a party line vote. So certainly does not have a broad bipartisan consensus. And as it goes to the Senate, as I mentioned a minute ago, while you can't filibuster nominees anymore, at least for the time being, the Democrats can filibuster legislation. And I think it's a lead pipe cinch to predict that there will be plenty of Democrats lined up to stop such a bill from getting easy passage on the Senate floor. If it becomes something that Mr. McConnell wants to do early on, which he has not indicated yet that he wants to, it would be an early test for just how many sort of conservative Democrats or Democrats who are potentially vulnerable to defeat next year would cross party lines to support such a thing. These are people, again, to remind, there are 10 Democratic senators running for re-election next year. I mean, we're already talking about the midterm election in states that Donald Trump carried. So those 10 Democrats are the ones that people have their eye on as the potential bipartisan crossovers. But too early to tell. And to be honest, Mr. Trump has not really made, he's made a deregulatory drive part of his stated agenda, but he really hasn't given much firm shape to exactly how he'd support doing that.
We're speaking with Roll Call senior editor David Hawkins, and also mainly originating in the House is a slew of bills aimed at federal employees, federal employment, budgets for federal agencies, and in particular, there's one from a fellow named Todd Rakita of Indiana, Republican, that would essentially, for new federal employees, take away Title V protections that they've enjoyed since the Carter administration. What are the prospects for that one?
Well,
it's only introduced.
He introduced that last year, and it got a lot of attention. He has not; it has not yet made it anywhere down the legislative process this year. I would say that would be a clear non-starter for virtually all Democrats. You know, may get through a on a party line vote, but I would say unlikely, highly unlikely to get through the Senate, given that the Senate still has the control over 48 seats. You know, and it's also the case that there are federal employees in every state. There are federal, and they lobby, and they are a strong voice. And you know, I think at some maybe simple level, you could make an argument that if Donald Trump is now talking about trying to create 25 million new jobs, there is some dissonance between wanting to create all these new jobs in the private sector and sort of eviscerating the stability of the federal workforce. So I'm not sure that one is going to get very far.
Because there's also bills, let's see, I think there's one from Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee that would make across-the-board budget cuts. I think she's got three different versions of it. And that doesn't sound like something that the budgeteers in Congress, Republican or Democrat, would necessarily go for. It's a matter of priorities for them.
Right. Across-the-board cuts are not very popular among members of Congress. Members of Congress believe that they got elected to pick winners and losers among government agencies and to set priorities. So they really, that's why, you know, the sequester from several years ago was really, was viewed as the kind of meat axe punishment for indecision that the Congress would never allow itself to suffer. They did suffer it. Now the big debate is to how and when to extract themselves from this sequester. So I think across the board cut like that is while it might sound good for an individual member to make a point back home, that is not the mainstream of thinking among the Republicans in Congress.
And we still don't have earmarks to help grease this. I guess maybe the big question is, if you look back at Lyndon Johnson or Bill Clinton, maybe even Ronald Reagan, they were jawboners, and they would call in people from the opposite party and work them using the Oval Office. Barack Obama didn't do that much, and it's not clear yet whether Donald Trump is a jawboner.
It is not. I think that's a really important point. I think that historians and even sort of short-term historians are already looking back on the last administration as a surprising to many lack of collaboration, really, between the presidency and Congress. In that the president really, yeah, right, he didn't like jawboning. He didn't like hanging out with members of Congress. He was not a schmoozer, and it paid off negatively for him. Many members of Congress in both parties, Democrats as well, say that this was a failing of the president's, that he could have gotten more done if he'd used the power of the presidency for more sort of easy persuasion. So we'll see. I mean, the first meeting between the congressional leadership and the president down at the White House was on Monday night. We will see if that becomes one of many or what the second day stories are about how that went down.
David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Find this interview and all of our transition coverage at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.